Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven.
Hello. Today I am absolutely overjoyed to finally welcome Corinne Rendon to the podcast. She's a guest I have wanted since I decided to start the podcast. She is owned by two Maligators. She is a highly accomplished IGP handler and trainer, and she is a trailblazer bringing positive training methods to the sport. She has worked for Canine Partners in the past and also part of the Restart Dog Project. I've been following Corinne since she bred Nando's Fizz, and she's getting on a bit now. So back in 2021, I finally went on one of Corinne's workshops with a little Dachshund pup that I bred, and I loved every minute. She's brilliant at picking up on things, the tiny little things in training, and tweaking them to make a massive difference. When I first heard about a job going on the Restart Dog Project and applied, one of the many draws to the job for me was to learn more from Corinne. So before I fangirl anymore, let's hear it from the lovely lady herself. Welcome, Corinne.
Hi. Well, that is, can I steal that and use it?
Yeah, of course you can. Of course you can. Yeah. I'll send you the blurb so you can reuse it. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I am. I am. Yeah.
Good.
Finally, because you messaged me ages ago. If anyone ever tries to contact me, they're kind of like, I keep saying to people, just send me a nudge because I'm hopeless. I'll get a message and I'll think, I need to get back to them. And then I've got a load of other messages and like, I've forgotten the other one. And so people usually say, oh, I don't want to pester you. No, you really, really need to. And people who know me will just send me like, Dawn up at Preston, she'll just send me a photo of one of her dogs, and I go, oh, shit, I need to get back to Dawn. You know what I mean? I'm all shocking.
I'm bad, but actually, I have to say, you make me feel better. You're worse.
Oh, God, I did a workshop in Scotland a few months ago for Kevin, at Kevin Motion, and he contacted me ages ago, and I thought, you must get back to him. And then it was Dawn who said, you've not got back to Kevin. Got back to Kevin, and finally when I did a workshop, it had been 18 months since he first contacted me, and I was like, oh shit, no, that's bad. I'm getting better.
That makes me feel privileged, because within 6 months of me messaging you, so we're good.
I'm hopeless.
Oh well, doesn't really matter, you're here now, and that's what matters. So let's get into it then. What would you say is your biggest mistake that you've made in your journey with dogs?
I think I've probably made that many. I think I've made a lot, like most people, not most, but certainly of my age, is early on everything was, or the majority of training was kind of compulsion based. And so I kind of just went with a trainer and, you know, put choke chain on your dog. I kind of think that's I'd like to say it's a big mistake, but at the time I didn't know anything else.
You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. And sometimes you kind of beat yourself up about it, and then you've got to think, well, yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know any different. And there's a guy stood in front of me who's got super trained dogs and says, do this, check your dog, and you kind of do it. And then later on down the line, you think, that poor bloody dog, do you know? So that's one thing, but that doesn't bother me as much now, because I just think, yeah, it's a process I went through, and at that time, there's nothing else I could have done. Now I think more recently, the things I've done which I regret are not listening to my dogs. Do you know, not, and I preach this so much that, you know, if say, for example, you've trained your dog to do something and you're absolutely convinced it knows what to do and it doesn't do it, then you need to listen to why it's not doing it. And sometimes it's motivation, isn't it? Sometimes it's motivation, but sometimes it's injury, illness, that kind of thing. So I can remember tracking one of my girls once, and she was having a phantom. And she wasn't tracking. I'm kind of like, well, this is dead easy. This is just easy grass. Why are you not tracking? And I was a little bit frustrated. And I'm like, oh. And even though I don't use like punishment or anything, but the fact that I've gone, come on then, and took her off the track, and I probably a little bit umphy and like, ooh, she's not tracking. We were quite close, so that emotionally she'll have picked up on that. But, you know, and I do think about that a lot, because although I've not said, oh, bad dog, me sort of going, ooh, why is she not tracking, and bringing off the track, for her that was it. What would have been a big deal? So that is one thing. And the other thing is, myself, I had hip replacement. It was about 4 years ago now. But prior to that, I'd been in a lot of pain. It was misdiagnosed. So I was in a lot of pain. I took a lot of medication. And when you're in pain, you get frustrated easily and you lose your temper. And again, I can remember sort of thinking, that moaning at the dogs and shouting at the dogs because I'm in pain and they're not doing whatever I wanted them to do. And now I'm better now. So now I know if I'm in like a low mood, I do suffer from depression. So if I get in a low mood, I know don't train your dogs. Or if, like, I twisted my knee a few weeks ago. And again, I know you only do what you can do. Because if I push myself and then I'm in pain, I don't know because I know now. But it's very easy to sort of kind of lash out. When I say lash out, I don't mean like physically, but just like...
Yeah, so verbally like and energy-wise,
Yes, so I've done that in the past. And now, so when before I had my hip replacement, I was on, like I say, a lot of medication, in a lot of pain. And I couldn't even remember how to train dogs. It was like crazy. It was like, I can remember someone saying, can you show me how to teach retrieve? And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And so now I know. It's like, if I'm in a kind of a position where I'm not feeling it, then don't train. But it was a good eye-opener for me because me suffering that pain and not being in the right frame of mind to train the dogs and not really being able to train the dogs because I just couldn't grasp it. I was like, I had an email from someone who wanted me to do I think it was a TV advert, and the dogs were, I don't know, 12 weeks old, and she sent me an email and said, you know, will you do the TV ad? I think they wanted quite a few puppies. She said, it'll be really easy. All we want is your puppy to stand. She says, yours will be doing that all the anyway. And I'm like, how do I teach my dog to stand? And because I'd been on the medication and the pain, I've got this like brain fog. But that has now made me realise, if the dogs are not doing something that you think maybe they should be doing or something they've been trained, you kind of need to look a bit closer, don't you? And read your dog and why is it not doing that? So I can feel bad about kind of getting a bit frustrated years ago, but it has taught me a lesson. So in a way, I'm kind of sad that it happened, but glad that it happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you've had that learning point. I think there's a lot to take from that because I've been in that position before. Whether it's low mood, I also suffer with depression, or whether it's through pain, emotional pain or physical pain. It is so easy, and we don't realize we're doing it at the time of being so kind of defeatist with the dogs and just being like, oh, for God's sake, what, you know, that kind of energy. And the dogs pick up on it so much. And I find that the dogs go one of two ways. They'll either go into kind of, well, I'm not doing it, and just kind of switch off. Or it depends on the dog. But I find that some of them kind of go into that kind of hyper and almost like that kind of teenage kind of just testing. Well, what about this? Yes. What about that? And then when they do that, I find that that actually makes things a lot worse because then you get more frustrated because you're like, well, you know this. And then it becomes this vicious cycle. But I think that's a really nice point to make, especially for the listeners, because I am one that I'm always preaching as well that if I come back from work or wherever I've been and I'm stressed or, you know, I'm anxious or something like that, I will not walk my dogs at that point. I will not go and train them at that point because I know that it's not going to work well. And even if it's, you know, if I'm against time and things like that, it's either, do you know what, we're going to scatter some treats in the garden or we're going to do some enrichment stuff because there's no pressure that way. Or it's going to be sit down, have a brew, calm down a minute. And then we might think about going out, but I won't set myself up to fail because it's also setting the dogs up to fail.
Yes, yeah. And I think it's hard, isn't it? Because I know that now because I've experienced it. So I've been there, I've done it. So now I can kind of think, you know, you can see it happening, can't you? But I think we also need to be kind to other people that don't realise it's happening, you know, when, but it is something, especially the work that when I've been doing some workshops on this kind of thing. So when dogs... other people's dogs, so if I'm training people and their dogs are not doing it, and the handler said, but he knows what he should be doing, he did it yesterday or whatever, you then got to look at why, haven't you, and say, well, why is he not doing it now? If he did it yesterday and you absolutely believe you've trained him, then there's a reason and we need to listen to that reason. So so like I say, I'm kind of sad that it happened, but now I can pass on that and say to people, we need to look at the dog and read and listen to what the dog's telling us.
Yeah, definitely. Right, slight hiatus in recording there because my Mac decided to be absolutely full of all the videos and stuff that I create all the time. But we are back. I've deleted a load of stuff and hopefully I'm not going to feel the fallout of that in future. So we were talking about kind of when training when we're not feeling great or not training, as the case may be, and how we've both definitely learn from that and help others avoid doing that. Have you got any more to add on that before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I just see now as kind of part of my duty if I'm training people is to be aware of that, and be aware that you know, it's happened to me where I've been frustrated and been a little bit annoyed. So I need to see that in other people. If I'm training other people and I see that, it might not be them as a person. It might be just how they are for whatever reason. So I think it's up to us, isn't it, to be aware of that.
Yeah. I think you were going on to say about when you do workshops and things and the people bring their dogs, the dog's not doing it, they thought they trained it. And for me, I was thinking that goes down to kind of generalization and making sure that the dog knows it in every situation, but that's just my take on it. Were you going on to say something else
Well,
or?
workshops are a little bit because when I'm doing a workshop and I constantly tell people, because a lot of people are nervous, aren't they? And I know
Of
I've
course
been
they are.
there, and I often, these people are braver than me, because I often tell them I don't go on workshops and handle. I'm too nervous to do that. I did one early this year. I anticipated having a puppy, so I booked on a workshop, thought I'll take my puppy with me. Puppy didn't happen, so I took my older dog, and I was just a bag of nerves, and it was just rubbish. Didn't learn anything. Everyone looked at my dog, and I'm presuming they must have thought, "Oh, is that really Corinne's dog?" So I kind of get it that people are nervous, and dogs and pick up on that, don't they? And they don't
Massively.
react. So yeah, I do get that, and I'm also aware that often because I'm hands-on. So often, if I'm doing a workshop, I've got a little phrase. I'm like, "Can I just?" And I'll just take the dog and do things. And that's mainly because often I feel what needs to be done. So it's easier for me to have a little play and kind of feel what I'm doing and think, yeah, this is what we need to do with your dog. And then if I can get the dog to do a behaviour, it's then I kind of know what needs to be done and the dog's got the ability to do those mechanics. But when I hand the dog back, I will say to them, you know, the dog's not getting a history with me and I'm novel. So it's easy for me to make a dog look good. It's not, it doesn't mean, well, Corinne's fantastic. It just means the dog's has no bad history, no good history. It's just kind of, okay, I'll do things for this lady. I'm a novel person. So I'm always aware that when I take other people's dogs, it can often make them feel worse because they can't get that behaviour. But I do try to say, yeah, it's not because yeah, Corinne's fantastic. It's because anyone could probably do this, because it just the dog's got history with you, and it hasn't got history with me, and I'm novel.
Yeah, I find that with clients of all the time, if they're like, "Oh, well, you've got a magic wand, you can do it," and I'm like, "No, the dog, especially like, say we're talking about loose leash walking for an example, of the dog has got a learning history with that owner of pulling, and they haven't with me, and I've done the right things from the second that I've took hold of that lead, and it makes it look magical. It makes them feel totally inadequate because they can see that the dog can do it, but not with them. And I'm always making that point too of it's not that I'm magical, it's not that I've got a magic wand, it's more a case of it's that learning history. The dog has learned over time and practiced these things with you, and they've got no history of practice with me, so they're kind of looking at me to go, "What are we doing?"
Absolutely. That's exactly it. You actually worded it better than me. That's absolutely it, isn't it?
It is. And I do find, like, especially with workshops and stuff, I'm totally with you. It depends who it is, whether I'm a handler or not, but most of the time, I'll be like, especially if I've not seen a trainer before, if they're doing a workshop, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to go and be a spectator.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there is that social pressure. There is that. And I think, imposter syndrome definitely comes into it when you're a trainer and you're in front of other trainers and it's like, well, this is my dog and they should be perfect because this is my job and this is what I do and my dog should be perfect all the time. And you feel that pressure on yourself, even if the rest of the people aren't judging you. You feel like you are being judged no matter what. So, of course, the dog is going to react differently to what they usually would because you've got all of this going around in your head. And the dog's like,
mum's not being normal right now. Yeah. What is going on?
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 It's hard. It's very hard. But it's, I think you are right in what you're saying of the brave people go and do it. And I think that that's the biggest, I mean, I don't know when it was, maybe 2014, 2015, when Clicker Expo was over here, I went and I'd booked on a load of workshops with Moss, who's now my old boy. And, you know, I'm going in front of these like world renowned trainers. But I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to get this opportunity again. Yeah. I'd spent a fortune. It's probably the most expensive weekend I'd been on in my career. And I just thought, sod it. I'm not going to get this opportunity again. Yes, I might look like a total numpty, but I'm going to learn the most from doing this. And I've spent my money, so I'm going to get the most out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So have you got any more, like, any more mistakes coming to mind?
I must have had hundreds, but I forget everything. Mistakes, I don't know. I suppose the other mistakes as a competitor. So recently, my big mistakes that I regret is the dog I've got at the minute that I'm competing with, or I was competing with. She had a lot of, her foundation wasn't as it should have been. So I make sure when I'm training my dogs, I layer in good foundation and then build on that for my competition. So with her, I got her when I was at my worst, health-wise.
Mm.
So that foundation wasn't there. And then I can't remember what age she was when she did a BH. I think she might have been about three and a half. And I was constantly aware that she should have a BH by now. Let's do the BH. So that's like the lower level of IGP. That's the kind of introduction level where you're looking at the dogs, that you've got control on the dog and that it's... you know, its temperament is sound, so that's the BH. And then it was so she got a BH, and I'm like, I need to get an IGP1. She should be doing her IGP1 now. So I competed with her, and rather than think to myself, normally what I would do is I would make sure the dog's ready, and I'd train it for IGP3, and then when I said, yeah, the dog's ready for an IGP3, I'll compete IGP1. But with her, I didn't. I kind of just went, she should be doing this now. And I competed with her. So when you go in competition, you're kind of taking a lot of your training away. So for people who don't compete in that kind of sport, when you're reward-based, you kind of want to reward your dog, don't you? So when I'm training my dog, I want to reward my dog. I love rewarding her. So I need to extend everything. So the heel work I need to extend, and everything needs to be extended. But in training, it's very unlikely that I'm going to do a full IGP round, like a full obedience round or a full protection round, without doing something within that training. So say if I'm training obedience, I might train heel work and then reward my dog. I might do a retrieve, reward my dog. But in competition, in IGP, we can't give anything in between. We start... introduce ourselves to the judge, we do the heel work, we do the jumps, positions on the move, send away. And in all of that time, the dog has to be focused and we don't reward it. So that's fine, you can build up to that. I kind of went, yeah, I think she should be ready, rather than thinking she's not ready.
Mm.
And every time you compete, you take a bit away, don't you? Because that anticipation of reward, it's not happening and things happen. And with her, what I've done is, I've constantly gone, yeah, I'll do another competition. I'll do another competition. And she learns really quickly. She anticipates a lot. So if she was to get anything wrong, when I say wrong, I mean from a competition point of view. So if she was to get anything wrong and it benefits her, then she's going to do it again. You know, if she only does one thing wrong, in fact, even if it doesn't kind of benefit her, if she does one thing wrong, then she's highly likely to do it again. She's, that's just her. And I did these competitions, she might get things wrong. And each time I'm kind of chipping away at my training and I didn't see it. I just kept thinking, oh no, I need to do another competition. I need to do another competition. And it was earlier on this year, she actually passed, did just an obedience competition. It was just, in IGP, it's three phases. So it's tracking, obedience and protection.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do individual phases. So I just did an obedience phase. And I was in the right frame of mind. So, of course, she's not. And she passed it. But it was embarrassing. I was kind of like, I should not have got this dog up. It wasn't fair on her. I was so nervous. I wasn't ready. She wasn't ready. And that, again, did me good. So I am learning by my mistakes. And I did think to myself, not right, I'm not competing with her again. That's it. Unless I can train her to the standards I want her to be at. And that really did me a world of good, because then as soon as I said, I'm not going to compete again, I'm going to make sure I train the dog. And if I train her and she's not ready, then I'm not going to compete. If I train her and she is ready, then yeah, I will compete. But in my head, I was saying, I'm not going to compete with her. And that just took all of this pressure off me. And it was great. It was really, really good, because it kind of was like, oh, do you know, it was relief that I actually, no one else had put this pressure on me. Nobody had said, you know, it was just me putting it on myself. And that was bad. And it wasn't good for her, because if I'm getting up there and she's not ready, it's kind of not fair on her, is it? I mean, I kind of guess she doesn't care, but in my head, I'm not being fair to her. And what that has done, that has really helped me, because what I've now done is I've gone, okay, I'm not going to compete with her. So let's just, all these ideas I have, because I often get little ideas, and I'll practice on my other dog, who I don't compete with, because I think to myself, if it doesn't turn out, it doesn't matter, because I'm not going to compete with her.
There's no pressure.
I kind of went, okay, I'm not going to compete with you, so that means I can play around. And that has actually done me the world of good, because I've instead of thinking I need to do A, B, C, I've gone, well, this will work for this dog. And I've had a little bit more confidence in my thought process. So normally I'll have new ideas and I'll think, I wonder if this will work. I'll try it on psych. And that's fine, it'll work on psych, but Cersei is a different dog. I mean, they are litter sisters, but they're totally different. So my ideas need to be ideas for that dog, not just random ideas. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and particularly for the sport. It's just having that individual view.
Yes, that's exactly it. So taking that pressure of competition away helped me to go, and it really did, because I've had all these little thoughts that I'm putting into practice with her. And in my head, I kind of went, this is what you need. And so I've started totally changed her training, and it's working. It's like, it's kind of like, why did I not do this earlier? Why did I not? Do you know, like my dog's gone. It's only taken 6 years, do you know? But I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, but better late than never.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really, really enjoying it, because the things I'm doing with her, I do outside the box things. So in IGP, the stuff I'm doing is not normal. But for her, it's kind of like, yeah, she gets it, I get it. And so now I'm back to thinking, yeah, I think I'll compete next year, but I'm not going to spoil that relationship or that training. It's going to be, I think I'll compete next year if she's ready. If she's not, that's fine. But it's just all that pressure's gone. So yeah, I think that's one of the biggest for me with Cersei is I've just kind of gone, I need to be at this level. And no, we need to be at the level our dog's at, don't we? Not the level we think we should be at.
I have a question.
That's a, yeah.
Because I've had a similar journey with the Daxies with competing. But do you think you would have had so many shoulds? So should be at this level, should be at this, should be doing that, if you hadn't have done it with previous dogs in the same sport?
Absolutely, that is dead right. I would not have thought that, yeah. So it's absolutely because, yeah, her mother was like going to the World Championships at 3.5. So she hadn't even done a BH. So yeah, so part of it was that. And part of it was a friend of mine, good friend of mine, who's got her little brother. She's just been to the World Championships. And we did our BH together. Then I think we did our IGP1 together. Yes, we did. And then she was doing her IGP2, and I'm like, yeah, I need to do mine. So part of it was previous history of my other dogs, and part of it was I need to keep up with you. And yeah. That's stupid, isn't it? And that was my pressure. That was pressure that I put on me. It wasn't pressure that anyone else put on me. So my friend wasn't saying, come on, you need to enter. She was like the opposite. And so it's a mixture of both, that yeah, I need to be at this stage because my other dogs have been at that, you know, at that standard. So yeah, you're dead right on that. Yeah.
I've had to stop myself with Ripple, which is my middle Dachshund, because her dad was like the first Dachshund to get level 6 in rally and all of that. It's totally different dog sport, but it's still competing in dog sports. And obviously, and I got a level 6 with another Dachshund as well, but not related to this line. So of course, when Ripple came along, it was always with the aim of she will be a rally dog. She's going to be a rally dog. But so, and she competed a couple of times, I don't know, under the age of 18 months. She did amazing. And then, you know, like life changes. And, you know, I've ended up going through a divorce, moving counties, you know, like just life and COVID and all of that kind of stuff. And before I knew it, I mean, now Ripple's 7. And it's like, wow. And yes, she made it onto the Crufts team for the interregionals for rally this last year, which was amazing. But it was after years of being out of it, and we'd finally gone, right, I'm going to do it. But even this year, I found myself going, slow down. She's not ready properly to be competing at the level you want her to in the level she's currently at. And just because her dad had pretty much retired by the age of 7 within rally doesn't mean she needs to. And I find that it's almost like, and especially, I think you're in the same boat as in, because you've got the relatives of the predecessors, it's like, well, they've got the genetic makeup to do it, and I've done it before, so they can do it. And it becomes like this pressure in your head, and then you just have all these expectations, when actually stepping away from it and going, does it really matter? Do they ask to compete? No. Should we just have fun and maybe do a bit and see how it goes without the pressure? Maybe.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because we do it to our, nobody else is pressuring us. We just do it to ourselves. And, and it is crazy. Yeah, but I'm feeling better now about my training, so hopefully.
Good.
But what I need to do is go, I'm feeling better about my training, hopefully I can compete, but it doesn't matter if I don't.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of at that same point with Ripple of, if she carries on and we do a bit, great. If she doesn't, she doesn't. I'm all right with that. I'm trying to do a bit more with her daughter, but I'm very, very mindful that she is a totally different ball game personality-wise than any Dachshund I've ever had before. So it's like, okay, we're going to enjoy this journey and see where it takes us rather than having a set path ahead.
Yeah.
I think the comparison is so common, even with, you know, pet dog owners who've got a second dog or who've got a dog after losing, you know, their older dog, and that, well, you know, the previous dog did X, Y, and Z, so this dog's going to do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no, you need to train the dog in front of you. And I know I'm guilty of kind of saying that to clients, of train the dog in front of you, but I'm guilty of being kind of almost being like Henry VIII, because I'm like, no, they need to do what their predecessors did.
Yeah. But it's do you know what happened with me when I made that decision that day? She, like I said, she got the competition, she qualified, but it wasn't. Yeah,
it wasn't your normal teamwork, is what you're saying.
It wasn't at all. And so when I said to myself, "Do you know what? I'm not competing again. I'm just going to train my dog, and if she's ready in the future, fine." And our relationship, I don't think it was bad before, but it's certainly better. Because I just enjoy training her. I've just kind of gone, well, let's do this and let's do that. And, yeah, and it really, really doesn't matter if we get it wrong or get it. I mean, I didn't think it mattered. But if I think about it now, I don't know. But if it mattered to me and I needed to get her to IGP3, then maybe I did put pressure on her without realising it. Because now I've gone, I'm not bothered about that. Let's do something else. Let's train this or let's train that. And I've been doing other things. And I'm just really enjoying my training. And so really I'm kind of thinking, maybe I did put pressure on her without realising it. So it's good that now I've gone, do you know what? Let's just have fun. Let's just really, really enjoy this game. And I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying training her. I'm absolutely kind of loving training her, because I call her, I say she's naughty. And
cheeky.
And in protection, they call her trigger happy.
Mm.
So when she was young, when she was a baby, and I was in pain with my hip, what she used to do, she was a bit of a bully. in a nice way. But I'd call her to me and she'd come running, and she constantly, nearly every day, she would run into my bad hip. So she'd come and just charge and hit my hip. And I used to say, it's like, I don't know, it was like, you know, if you think of a predator hunting and it spots the weak animal, it kind of like, yeah, that's weak. I kind of felt like that was me. She was going, you're weak, your leg's weak. And she just hit my leg. And I was like, and I don't know where I'm going with this, actually. But anyway, that's what I was saying, she was naughty. So straight away I was like, oh, she's really naughty, this dog. And then I go to my workshops, and because I've kind of gone, well, I'm not as bothered as I used to be about her being, you know, getting the qualifications now. And at the workshop, she's really naughty. So what she's learnt at the workshops is, so I have a group of people there, and they might be sat down, and I might be talking to them, giving that information. And I might bring her in to demonstrate, and she'll wander, and she'll steal something. So she might steal a bottle of water or whatever. And everyone laughs. So I'm like, oh, she's really naughty, this dog. But actually, she's just doing what she's learned, isn't she? She's just gone, I've stolen a bottle, everyone's laughed, she's gone, yeah. And at one time, I used to get a bit embarrassed, and now I'm kind of like, well, you know, it doesn't matter that much. So, yeah, I used to call her naughty, and like in the protection, we call her trigger happy, because she'll just randomly bite the sleeve, or she did. And I'd be like, oh. But when I took that pressure off, and I decided to train her, you know, and get these new ideas and think, and like look at the dog rather than the journey, if you like. And I'm just so enjoying it. And I'm really, really kind of, actually, she's not a naughty dog. She's a little bit, like you said, cheeky. And she enjoys doing those things and people laughing at her. But actually, the training I'm doing now, she's kind of like, yeah, I can do this. I can be a good girl and I can not be naughty. I'm just loving it. I'm really enjoying it.
Well, I've had another brief hiatus in recording because it seems we are cursed.
I think we put pressure on us and we don't realise that. The pressure on us is also feeding into the dogs, isn't it? And I kind of didn't realise that. I didn't realise that at all. So I took the pressure off me, decided I wasn't going to compete. So I just started training the dog, trying these new ideas, and I'm just loving it because it's like, it really, really, I mean, it doesn't matter anyway, doesn't it? It's just a competition. It doesn't matter. But kind of we get it into our head that it does matter. So me going, do you know, it really, really doesn't matter. Yeah, it just makes everything so much fun now. I mean, even before, so if say I was doing protection and she had a sneaky bite, I'm not going to punish her for that. It's just, it is what it is. But inside, I probably would feel frustrated. And and I'm like, oh, she's done it again. And without realising it, she probably would be feeling that, wouldn't she? Mm-hmm. So now I'm trying new methods anyway. I'm trying different things that I'm doing with her. But also that's got to be a big part of it for her. Yeah, like she had a sneaker bite the other day. I don't remember what she did. I'll do some protection and she had a little bite. And I always said to the helper, if she bites, you just don't do anything. Like, you know, it's down to me. Don't do anything. She had a sneaker bite. I went, and went and asked her to bark again. And she's like, yeah, okay, I can do that. Whereas before, I would still do the same. I wouldn't, there'd be no punishment there, no sort of physical or, you know, me telling her off or anything. But, yeah, it must have come through, you know, sort of, she's done it again. Which, no, it's like, yeah, it really doesn't matter. And it's like, absolutely does not matter. And, and that's making it more enjoyable for me, but I'm sure it's making it more enjoyable for her as well. I'm really enjoying it at the minute, yeah.
But that's that, and I can tell, like, your face is lighting up while you were talking about that, you know, that you've, since you've took the pressure off, and you know, I can only imagine really the difference in the energy. I don't think you were being harsh or being like miserable before, but you can see you're absolutely glowing talking about it. So there's no surprise really why she's enjoying it more and you're enjoying it more, because then it becomes this positive cycle. We're just having fun, and what does it matter? I think it's a big thing to kind of encourage optimism within the dogs.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's so easy to have that pessimism because we get frustrated. And of course they pick up on that energy. I'm a big one on the energy that we are portraying to our dogs. Whether we realise that they are picking up on it or not, they always are.
Yeah. Do you know, and it's really interesting because I teach people this. I teach them, and then you can't see it yourself, can you? You can. It's easy. My friend always says it's easy to train other people because you can see what's happening in front of you. But when it's you, you don't see what's happening. You know, you need someone else to go, hey, just, you know, that little wake up call. I am loving it.
Good. Good.
Just need to buy myself a puppy. I want a puppy at the minute.
Yeah, you've been after a puppy for a long time.
We'll get there. We'll get one.
I'm sure you will. And we're quite similar in the respect that we have very high expectations of, you know, not just any puppy will do. Absolutely. It will be a certain line, it will be a certain breed, it will be from a certain breeder who raises them in a certain way, and the, you know, at the right time, and all of that. And it's almost like it's really hard to get all the jigsaw pieces to fall into place. And even then, there's no guarantees, but at least we've satisfied our own kind of tick boxes.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because a while ago a friend had some pups, and I was kind of like, so my girl, I tried to breed her and it didn't take. So I was gutted, and I was like, I just need a puppy. But I had to sort of think to myself, no, you do not need a puppy now. Because I thought to myself, if I just go and get a puppy, I'm just going to go and get any puppy. I mean, obviously, it would be the breed I want from working lines, etc. But I need to sort of hold myself back, because I wouldn't have known if I'd just gone and got any puppy. Do you know what I mean? Because I was a bit emotional because my girl hadn't taken. So my friend did have a litter of puppies, and they were nice. I just thought, no, I can't. I need to know that I'm in the right space, you know, my right headspace. And now I'm in the right headspace, and I'm like, there's no puppies.
God's law is what it is.
So, but I'll wait. I'll get one.
You will. And it'll be when the time's right, when it's meant to be. It's frustrating in the meantime. I'm going to get that. I've been after a brindle miniature longhaired dachshund for a long time. And they are like hen's teeth to find. And there's been the odd one that's come up. But just because I'm looking for a specific pattern and colour doesn't mean I should have one. Because, again, it comes back down to the right breeder, the right rearing, all of that kind of stuff. Never mind the health tests. It'll happen when it happens. And if it doesn't, well, it wasn't meant to be. But I get the frustration. Totally.
I don't think I've seen a brindle long hair. I'm trying to think. We have quite a few Daxies near where I live. Quite a few, and I used to have many years ago. I used to have a friend that bred them, but a long, long time ago, like before you were born. I've never said that before. And I did get I did have someone who asked me if I wanted to puppy walk for the police, and I was like, but that'll satisfy that need to get a puppy and train it. But I'm like, no, there's no way I could, like, after 12 months, hand this puppy. Well, I could, you'd have to do it because it wouldn't be mine. Yes. But I just couldn't do it. I'm a bit too soft. So that's not happening.
I get that. I do get that. It's hard. It is hard when you're fostering. Anyway, right, let's wrap up. So kind of before you tell everyone, like, how they can find you and all of that kind of stuff.
Before I tell them how they can find me and I ignore them. I don't mean to do it. It's just, I forget to get back to people.
That's funny. So before then, tell the listeners, what are your kind of three big tips of things to avoid?
Tips to avoid?
Right, mistakes to avoid.
Well, I don't know whether to avoid or to, but I would say don't do things just because you're told, you know, you should be doing this.
Or your friend is.
It's, and don't ignore your gut. That's like, and just enjoy it. Don't push yourself. Don't be harsh on yourself, because you're harsh on yourself, it's going to feed into your dog, isn't it?
I love that. They are great tips. Absolutely brilliant tips. Can you tell everyone how you can ignore them?
Okay, so my friend is currently doing me a website. I think she's actually done it, but I'm not there with it yet, so ignore the website for now. But that will be coming. So mainly, it's kind of Messenger, really. Facebook, Messenger, that kind of thing. And what I say to people is, if you want to contact me, message me. And then in 3 days' time, message me again. And in another three days' time, if I've still not got back to you, message me again. Because I get so many people that say, oh, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't, you know, message you once and you must be busy. But honestly, you forget. Yeah, because I get, someone will message me and my friend says, you shouldn't look at it until you're in a place to get back to them. And I'm like, no. And I don't know why, I just don't do that. So I look at a message, I'll be out training my dog, I'll see a message and I think, right, I'll get back to you later. And I genuinely believe I will get back to them later. And then I might get half a dozen more messages. And so that one's dropped down then, hasn't it? And I can't see it anymore. So yeah, so what people who know me do, they'll just send me another message and they'll either just put on it nudge, or what one friend does, she just sends me a photo of her dogs. So anything like that. So message me on Messenger and I'll try and get back to you. And if I don't, message me again. Yeah, and that's it.
And so the Facebook page is Dog Training with Corinne Rend, correct?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So anyone can search that. Corinne quite often has quite a few. So she has workshops and things and people host her. So my advice would be, if you want to go on a workshop, contact the host.
Yes, actually. So that's actually the best. Yeah, because, yeah. Yeah, they host me and I just turn up and they sort out. Yeah, so that's a good one. Thank you.
Yeah. No worries. Yeah, get someone else to deal with it and then you won't get ignored. But yeah, and I would encourage anyone who is looking to do dog sports, no matter where you are in your dog sports journey, to go and do a Corinne workshop, because it will be a massive eye-opener. I can say that, you know, like from my own learning, because it was a massive eye-opener when I came with little Renard and I was like, wow. And yeah, wanted to do more. It's just life took me on a different direction. But I'm sure I'll be on one of your workshops again. I'm sure.
Yes.
I will.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
No worries.
Thank you.
But yeah, thank you so much for finally joining me. And I've really enjoyed this. And I will be back for the listeners next week. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.